Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 84, Chili Cast. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking. Got a great show lined up for you today. I have Seth Heasley from the Take Me to Your Reader podcast on as my guest, and we're going to talk about all things chili. You know, that perfect one-pot meal that's timely this time of year because the Super Bowl will be coming up in a couple of weeks. So we're going to get deep into it so you can get some tips on how to take your chili game to the next level just in time for the big show. I won't take up too much time here, but I just want to mention that if you do want to get in touch with me, you can send an email to me at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, I read and respond to all my emails, so feel free to send a note over my way. I'd love to hear from you. And I'll mention for anything we reference in this conversation, whether it's a cookbook or recipes, you can find the show notes over at the website at kitchencounterpodcast.com/84. That's just the number 84. Go there to get all the show notes for this episode. All right, everybody. That's enough of the housekeeping. Let's jump right into the conversation on Chili Cast. Okay, so I'm here with Seth Heasley from the Take Me to Your Reader podcast. So, Seth, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
So we've talked about this for a long time.
And I
will take full responsibility for taking so long for this to come to fruition. But we've been talking about chili, and we've been wanting to do a chili cast for a long time. So that's what we're going to be doing today, because I know you're a crazy good home cook, and I know come on.
I don't know about that.
I know you have a lot of stuff you want to talk about when it comes to chili. But before we get into that, I was hoping you could share a little bit about your show and where folks can find you, and tell us a little bit about what you do podcast-wise.
Sure. So, I mean, you know this, but maybe your listeners don't. The podcast is called Take Me to Your Reader, and this is a podcast that I do with my friends James and Colin. And what we do is we talk about science fiction films that are adapted from books or novellas or short stories. And so we'll kind of compare and contrast. It's really cool, actually, when there's multiple adaptations of a story, like Total Recall. You know, it's a short story that was adapted into two films. And so we get to kind of say which one we thought did a better job with it, or if the story was better. And, you know, lots of times, of course, the written is better. But occasionally, you know, a movie sneaks in there, which is awesome.
And you know what I really like about your show, aside from the fact that you've done a couple of Ray Bradbury episodes, I'm a huge Ray Bradbury fan, is that I love science fiction, but I'm not really up on new science fiction, quote unquote new. So I love to hear when you guys talk about new stuff, because it really kind of opens my eyes to movies and books and short stories and radio plays and podcasts and all that kind of stuff where you find this. And your level of discourse on the show is really high. You guys do a really amazing job getting into the details.
You.
And it's not just kind of a fluffy conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny. It's light. But you guys really do get into it. And you have some great guests. So if anybody out there likes science fiction in any way, shape, or form, definitely should check out the Take Me to Your Reader podcast. And I'll put all of the links to Seth's show in the show notes as well. So let's jump into Chili Cast. So we've talked about this. I think we talked about it at a meetup we were both at months ago. And we thought, let's get together and do a show. We were kind of brainstorming what about. And I think you brought up chili. And I thought that was a great idea because I haven't really talked about it. But I'm curious to know why you want to talk about chili. I mean, what interests you about chili? And after we get past that, we'll talk about like what chili even is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, chili as a cook, you know, right now I'm kind of the primary cook in our house. But it wasn't always that way. My wife did a lot of the cooking early in our marriage. But the first thing that I took over as a recipe that I owned was chili. And I think that's not actually super uncommon, right? Super Bowl foods, maybe the dude is going to cook that. But it wasn't just the first recipe that I cooked. It was the first one that I owned. And by that, what I mean is I can make a chili without looking at a recipe now. And that gives you the freedom to kind of start tweaking and to dial in, you know, turn the knobs to dial in your perfect chili. And the other part of it is I feel like chili as a dish is a great blank canvas for expanding your cooking chops. So, you know, like if you're going to put a bunch of vegetables in it, you can develop your knife skills cutting up the vegetables. You know, if you want to use whole cuts of meat or stew meat, you know, you're learning about braising, right? Extracting flavor from vegetables if you're going to go with the vegetarian chili. Because like if I look back at our chili, where it started, the first one that I really owned was we weren't eating a lot of red meat. So we made a chicken chili. And then we went vegetarian. And so I had to make a vegetarian chili and figure out how to fill in the empty space where the meat would be, right? And, you know, how to get that meaty flavor to it. And then went to a paleo chili when I was doing a weight loss thing at my gym. And so at that point, I'm like, okay, no beans. So I went ahead and did stew meat. And so that was the first time that I had tried kind of whole cuts of meat rather than ground meat. And so little by little, I've just kind of had to tweak and shape the chili in order to get kind of where it is now.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think the other thing about chili, like for me, I was a kid, you know, chili is a kind of a kid-friendly dish. But yeah. When I was a kid, I didn't like chili at all.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, I don't know why. And I think it's because when I was a kid, I wasn't a super adventurous eater.
Okay.
So it wasn't something we ate a lot in our household. And like when they had it at school lunch, I was like, yeah, I don't know about that. It looks kind of weird.
No, I'll give you that.
Yeah. And, yeah, maybe school lunch chili is not a great, you know, jumping off point for a love of chili. But as I grew older and kind of got into cooking for myself, much like you, you kind of find this. And the thing about chili too, in addition to all the points you bring up, is it's a very kind of communal food. It's always you mentioned the football party. Our family a couple of years ago had a chili cook-off. You know, within the family. So there's fun ways that chili kind of pops up. And it's one of those foods, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but it's kind of one of those foods that, you know, is it's like a pizza or, barbecue, where it's kind of one of those foods that started out simply and kind of has grown and expanded geographically to mean so many different things to so many people. And that's why it's fun. You could literally probably make chili every day and never eat the same chili twice.
Right. And that's the other part about kind of the blank canvas idea is you can take it different directions with different flavor profiles. I mean, like you could make like an Indian chili that had kind of those warm, what we consider sweet spices, like cardamom and cinnamon and that kind of stuff. If you wanted to, it'd be strange maybe, but, you know, well, it'd still be recognizably a chili.
For our chili cook-off, I made a Ethiopian chili with berberi spice. Nice. Our son's from Ethiopia, so I thought, let's totally do something that the family wouldn't expect. And surprisingly, everybody liked it. My dad liked it. My dad's not a spicy, different kind of spicy food type of guy. So when he ate it, he was like, this is pretty good. I thought, you know, chili's a canvas. It's something that can be accessible to a lot of people, I think.
Nice.
So let's talk about, just to set a baseline, because we've already alluded to the fact that chili can be very different. You can have a different chili for every day of your life, probably, but it has fairly simple origins. And so you have a little bit about the history of chili I think you want to share, but I thought I'd start out by let's do the definition of chili. And I don't know, do you have this book, the Deluxe Food Lover's Companion?
I don't.
I'm kind of an encyclopedia dork, and this is basically a food encyclopedia. So I'm going to go to this for just the definition of chili, because it has a real basic good one. And it's actually in here as chili con carne. So it says it's Spanish for chili with meat. The dish is a melange of dice or ground beef and chilies or chili powder. I mean, that's about as simple of a definition as you can get.
Yep. So, but that's not what I grew up with, right? And I'm wondering if it is what you grew up with.
No. My traditional view of chili would be ground beef of some sort, which follows the definition. I suppose some sort of a chili, but not very strong. Tomato sauce, beans, onion.
Yeah.
Which if I had to put an easy definition on, I'd say it's like the can of chili you buy in the grocery store. The Nally's or the Denison. That's the kind of chili I would consider kind of your standard chili.
Right. And I would agree with you. And that's what I grew up with. And unlike you, I loved chili. I grew up in Anchorage. And so like any soups or any kind of warm foods, comforting foods during the winter were just, I was all over that. And chili was always one of my favorites. But I went to school in Texas and I went to the store one time and, you know, my wife and I are pretty poor. We're married students. And so we ate a lot of stuff out of cans. And so I went into a Winn-Dixie there in Longview, Texas and looked for chili. And the only thing I found was Nally chili, no beans. And I actually asked one of the clerks, I'm like, hey, do you have any chili with beans? And the guy says, chili don't have no beans. Like, what? I'd never even heard of that idea. And I asked around to other folks in Texas and they're like, oh yeah, no, chili didn't have any beans or tomatoes, which, you know, that's like two out of four ingredients missing from what I consider chili. So
yeah, I would think that chili would be tomato sauce and beans and chili powder, and right, beef would be an optional ingredient.
Right.
It's quite the opposite of what you're describing. So chili then. So give us a little background on chili, what you know about where chili started. And I think you're probably at ground zero there with your story.
Yeah. And Texas is kind of the place where evidently chili comes from. And I don't know where it comes from before that, but in terms of the popular what is chili, San Antonio seems to be the epicenter for it. And I'll send you an article that I was reading about it. I think it was from Slate, where evidently the original kind of conception of chili was dried beef and dried chilies and suet that was pounded into bricks and used during the Civil War as rations. So you could just drop it into a pot of boiling water and reconstitute it into chili. And Stephen Crane, I don't know if you've ever read The Red Badge of Courage, mm-hmm, he called chili fire bricks from Hades, which I think is awesome.
You know, I don't think I would have even known that when I read it, probably. I probably wouldn't even have made that connection. That's interesting.
Yeah. But it was also evidently kind of one of the original food cart offerings. There were women of Hispanic origin, probably Mexican origin, called the Chili Queens of San Antonio, who served it in the public town squares and stuff to locals and visitors. And I know they have all kinds of chili cook-offs and competitions there. And I think there's some kind of international federation of chili. I'm not even sure what it's called, but in their standards, they do have it specified, no beans.
Yes, yes. They're very strict when it comes to chili competition, which I think would be fun to enter someday, although I'm sure I'd get destroyed because the thing about chili and your story, too, is it's like really, I guess you could say, and I suppose at the time, I don't guess Texas maybe was part of the United States, but I guess you could say it's like really a true American, or at least a true –
at least North American, right?
Thank you. A North American innovation, because chili peppers are an original cultivar of the Western Hemisphere, right? They came from Central America, South America. Yeah. So truly, you couldn't have chili without Central and North America. So it's really truly a unique Western dish, whereas when you have chilies in Spain and chilies chili peppers in Indian cuisine, that actually is a byproduct – of kind of this colliding of worlds where the chilies kind of went back with Portuguese explorers, I guess, and kind of migrated back into that cuisine. So it's very interesting.
I haven't looked at how like the Thai chili got there. If it is native over in the Thailand area, kind of Southeast Asia.
That's a great question. I don't know that.
But I think I remember watching Alton Brown one time on Good Eats, and he was talking about the various kinds of chilies. And I think he mentioned that the one that was not native to America was the Thai chili.
Okay. Okay, good to know. I did not know that. So we've talked a little bit about what is chili, where it kind of came from, and even some of the – we touched on some of the controversies, right? Beans or no, tomato sauce or not. I know we want to spend a little bit of time in this conversation kind of talking about – now that we kind of know what chili is, but we don't have to follow obviously the traditional authentic chili mode, right? We like to cook all sorts of different things. But in general, we wanted to kind of talk about things to kick up our chili – game a notch. So you can find a recipe for chili, you know, basically by throwing a rock over your shoulder. You could hit a recipe for chili on the internet or a book or whatever. But how do you take a recipe for chili? Or like you said, you cook chili from memory, from scratch. You just know how to put together chili. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you do to kind of make your chili better or elevated, or what kind of tips and tricks, I guess, to talk about? Do you want to get into that?
Yeah. And so for me, the word is complexity. And what I mean by that is complexity of flavor. Because at its base, if you take the kind of basic chili that you and I grew up with, right, the pretty simple 4 or 5 ingredients, off-the-shelf chili powder, you know, does not add a lot of complexity of flavor. You get some savoriness from the meat and from the tomatoes, some salt. And chili powder doesn't have a lot of complexity to it, right? Just the stuff that you get in the store. And so my tweaks are all kind of how to add in different flavor notes. So they fall into sweetness, smoke, and heat. And heat is the most obvious one, right? You just put some chilies in there. But the other two, I have a couple different tips on how to get them in.
And the interesting thing about something like a chili, which is basically a stew or if a thick soup, if you want to call it that. But whenever you make something like that, you're always kind of fighting against the tendency for all the ingredients that you put in there to kind of meld and
to get muddled
and kind of mute one another. Mm-hmm. So, you know, typically with a dish like that, all the ingredients you put in, like if you put in fresh vegetables and you cook it for a couple of hours, say whatever your dish is, you know, those, they'll break down. They kind of blend in. You lose the celery flavor. I mean, it contributes to the overall dish. So you're always kind of fighting against that with the chili. So I'm curious to know, like, what you do to kind of liven it back up or, you know, bring those back out so you're not just tasting like a bowl of tomato-y, chili-ish stew.
Well, and the other part is, too, if you look at the three items that I had, sweetness, smoke, and heat, if you go overboard on any of those, you're in a lot of trouble because you do need to have some balance. Because if you go over on heat, you taste nothing but pain, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just not fun. You know, you can pour sour cream in there or cheese on it to try and cool it off, but you don't want to go way that direction. You do need to have balance. So for heat, the most basic form of heat that I like, and it isn't even necessarily heat in terms of, wow, you know, that's burning my mouth up, but just a good chili flavor. And I'm using chili with an E there, meaning the actual peppers. Mm-hmm. Although they're really chilies, right? What's a chili?
You say chili, I say chili.
Right. Exactly. And so like the most basic way to extract flavor from chilies to me is to roast them. And so I like to include a roasted bell pepper in with my tomato puree. And I just feel like it adds some complexity in there. And so like anytime I used to do this all the time during the summer, we used to grill on a little charcoal grill, a little smoky. Mm-hmm. And so anytime I'd finish grilling burgers or whatever, if I had bell peppers in my fridge, after I was done cooking, I'd throw one of the peppers onto the grill and shut it. And it would give it that great kind of smoky roasted flavor. It was awesome. So even now I'll just throw a couple of them into the oven and bake them for a half hour.
Until they get char a little bit. So how do you feel about using you can buy roasted red peppers in a jar, for example. So how do you feel about that?
I feel like it's simple enough to roast peppers that there's no need to do that. But in a pinch, you know, it would add some complexity to your flavor. But I also do like to do sometimes, you know, I'm just in a hurry and I'm going to put in a thing of fire roasted diced green chilies, right? And that's going to add some good flavor. But I do like to go with like whole Anaheims or whole poblanos, roast those, dice them up and throw them in. And I do like to include like a jalapeno or two. I have gone overboard before. I used to grow jalapenos in my backyard and I'd roast them all up and I'd put them in a freezer bag after I peeled them. And, you know, 1 to 3 is the right range, but there's always some variety of how spicy they actually are. And so you really do have to kind of be deliberate about adding something spicy.
And when you say like adding the spicy peppers, are you talking about during cooking or at the end?
Yeah, I'm talking about during cooking. But that's actually a great point because you don't want to go overboard with the spice. And so if you bring it up to a level that you think is acceptable to the proletariat, right, to just everybody, and then you can have cayenne pepper on the table if people want to take it up, you know, add some extra kick.
Yeah. And I've also found that like jalapenos, for example, at the end as a garnish can actually, even if you're not looking for a lot of spice, but it can actually kind of wake up the rest of the flavors too. It kind of brings everything alive.
Now, are you talking about like diced fresh jalapenos?
Yeah.
Okay. And that adds a little crunch there too.
Yeah, so. Crunch or even milder peppers. I mean, you could just do like even like a banana pepper or something or an Anaheim chili, you know, which isn't really spicy per se. But okay. So that was your hot.
Yeah.
Tip. So what else do you got? You got smoky and sweet, did I hear?
Yeah. So sweet is the next one. And you're going to call me a hipster here, Roger, but I use pumpkin. I know that you are not necessarily anti-pumpkin, but you're like, I'm over pumpkin.
I'm not pro-pumpkin. Let me just put it that way.
Gotcha. So what happened here, the reason that I started doing it this way is that my wife and I participated in a CSA. Community supported agriculture, right? And toward the end of the season, we were getting winter squash in every bag and like 5 of them. And so we'd get acorn squash and butternut and kabocha and all these different squashes. I'm like, well, what am I going to do with these? And the first thing I did with them was roast them, puree them, and make pancakes, you know, pumpkin pancakes. Those are great. But then I just started adding, you know, a cup or two of pumpkin puree or squash puree to any soup I was making. And it doesn't add a lot of flavor. right? It adds a little bit of sweetness. Depending on the squash, you know, there's kind of some nuttiness in there too. But sweet was the main thing that I noticed from it. And the other thing that I really liked about it, it's a great way to hide a vegetable that your kids otherwise wouldn't.
Oh, yeah, really.
And so in the chili, I do feel like it really kind of balances out some of that savory element of the tomatoes, because tomatoes kind of have a sour flavor to them. And so it's something that's subtle, but it's something that I just always do because I'm like, winter squash is good for you and nobody's going to know that it's in there. And so I don't just dice it up and throw it in.
So what do you do if you don't have, I mean, do you just omit it or do you do something else if it's not that season? And
Yeah. I might omit it. It's pretty rare that I don't have it, like at least one sweet potato around. And so sweet potato will work too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about sweetness a little bit more too. Is there anything else you do to add sweetness to a chili? And like you said, it's not to make your chili sweet. It's to kind of counterbalance the sour or the bitter or not, I guess mostly the sour in a chili, especially with tomato based.
Yeah. And actually this came up this week because I made some chili and I went overboard with the salt. And I think you've talked about how to try and rescue things that have too much salt in them. And, you know, so you can add some water and kind of dilute it out a bit. But what I really needed was like half a bag of sweet corn. Hmm. Just dump that in there. It adds a great kind of color contrast too. And the sweetness would have really balanced that out. And so as we're eating, my wife's like, why didn't you put corn in here? That would have been tremendous. So that's another possible way to do it.
And if you want to go real simple, I mean, and I do this with like pasta sauce, a tomato-based pasta sauce, if it's a little too sharp, like acidic or sour, just a hefty pinch of sugar will do that, will help a lot too. That'll cut down some of the acidity. So,
I was going to kind of throw it back to you and say, well, what would you do to add a sweet component?
Or even brown sugar.
I think in chili, I'd probably go brown sugar. Yeah. Just have that kind of molasses flavor because it's more complex.
Exactly. And I'm a big fan. This isn't necessarily sweet, but you mentioned it earlier, even when you were talking about like an Indian version, perhaps, of chili, is I'm a big fan of just putting like a trace amount of things like clove or allspice, or maybe even cinnamon, you know, not to where it's like this chili tastes like cinnamon.
Yeah.
But to where or even I think is a great addition to things like chili and tomato soup is a dash of yellow curry powder because it adds this interesting, you know, people taste it and they say like, wow, this is good chili, but there's just something interesting happening. And I like doing that. It's not necessarily a sweetness, but it's kind of that warmer spice and it adds a little dimension, you know, to just your chili flavor.
When we were first kind of coming up with the chili recipe before I took it over in Texas, it was a Super Bowl party that we took our chili to, and another family that were friends of ours brought chili as well. And he had put like cocoa powder and cinnamon and that kind of stuff in it. And it was a different flavored thing. And I never wanted to go that direction, but, you know, some people really, really liked that kind of warmness that you get from the cinnamon in there.
Mm-hmm. So. And I do know a lot of people that put cocoa powder into their chili.
Yeah.
And I don't really go down that road. I'm not a fan of that. I actually know people that put ground coffee in their chili.
Not for
sweetness, I suppose. But I'm not, it doesn't do anything for me. I don't
know. It would add some acidity, I guess. And
bitterness,
and
maybe.
And some bitterness.
I don't know. It's not my thing.
No.
Okay. So hot. So we talked about hot and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments on those two before we jump over to smoky?
I think I looked back, I have all my old recipes. And so I can kind of chart the development of the recipe. But I think in the chicken chili that I used to make, I used to put cranberry juice in there, sweetened cranberry juice.
Interesting.
And so it gave kind of some sweet and some acid there as well. And I think you had mentioned that you did something with acid in our emails back and forth.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. So, and this is something I like to do. So one of my just general things I like to do with chili, if I can, is make it a day before. Which I generally like to do with any type of dish, like I mentioned, that's a stew or a soup, because you know, it's one of the few things I look forward to leftovers for. It's just better the second day or the third day. Yeah. But what I find when I take it out, again, everything's kind of muddled and blended. So I like to use a little bit of lime juice because lime is quite acidic, or even lime zest. I like to just kind of put back in as I'm reheating it or just finish it off with a little lime juice. And it just kind of wakes it up. It just adds a little, you know, pep to it. But not so much where it tastes like a lime chili. But lime and chili kind of have a natural affinity for one another, you know, when it comes to flavor. So I think a little bit of lime juice. I mean, you could do lemon juice. You could even do a little white vinegar.
Sure.
If you don't have those other things. But I think lime juice is great. It's very acidic. You know, I think lime is quite a lot more acidic than even lemon juice. From a citrus perspective, but I like to do a little bit of that just to kind of wake it back up.
Yeah. Brighten it up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So the last kind of component that I like to add is smoke. And this is one you do have to be really careful on. Because like if you just add liquid smoke to your chili, in all likelihood, it's going to be awful. And so I'll talk about kind of two different things that I've done and then the one that I do now. So one real easy one to do is to just use chipotles in adobo. Because that adds that great kind of barbecue. Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite things.
Yeah. And so I'll just throw a chipotle in with my tomatoes when I puree them up. I've never liked chunks of tomato, and so I always just go with canned tomatoes and puree them up, and it makes a great base. But I feel like that it's a better quality than if you just got tomato sauce. So the other thing that I like to do, and I don't know if you've done this, Roger, is to make my own chili powder.
Yeah.
And sometimes, so I'll use chipotles to make that, dry chipotles, or just add some smoked paprika into my, my chili powder mix. And I feel like the real benefit of making your own chili powder is you can kind of dial in exactly what spices you want in your chili, and then you don't have to worry about any other dry component.
Yeah. Now, how do you make yours? Because typically what I'll do is I'll grab a bag of dried chilies, whatever variety it is I'm interested in doing it. You know, let's just say New Mexico chili or whatever.
Right. Or ancho.
Or ancho. Ancho's great. And I typically will seed them, toss them in a pan, just kind of give them a like a skillet with a little roast flavor. And then I usually they'll break apart at that point. And I'll just toss them in. I have a coffee grinder that I use for a spice grinder and just kind of pulse it. Yeah. Yeah. And it's quite a different flavor than your typical chili powder. And in some cases it can be, if you're not used to that, it can be unappealing, I think. Because sometimes it's like, whoa, that's, it's a lot different, more forward flavor or chili flavor, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you can kind of dial in what you like though. That's the nice thing. Like you can check the variety of chilies that you want to use and find the one that's kind of your chili flavor. The thing I really like about it is I used to do it in just a, I had a little food processor that was either a chopper or a grinder, and it never ground the chilies up super, super fine. And and I really liked the way it looked, just having little flecks of chili through there. I've been reading Kenji Lopez Alt's book, The Food Lab.
Oh, yeah.
And he makes a chili paste. So he actually will toast the chilies and then put them into stock until they get soft and then blend them. And that's something that I'd really like to try as well. But so you can add smoke there in a variety of ways. Or, you know, if you just, all you want to do is add smoke, rather than going with liquid smoke or something like that that tastes kind of artificial, I'd say go with smoked paprika.
I agree.
Because it's just a little bit though. But the way I do it now is, I've been buying meat from a farm down in Carlton. And if I get a pork share, I can get ham, or I can get like smoked ham hocks as well with it. And so like anytime I make a holiday ham, I take that bone. If it, I'm assuming this is a smoked ham, of course. I make stock with the like ham hocks and ham bones. And I feel like that has a great kind of subtle smoky flavor to it. It's not overpowering. The only thing that you have to worry about, and this is what happened to me this week, is you have to remember not to salt as early if you're going to use ham stock in your chili. Because if you're heavily salting your vegetables and then you put ham stock in there, it tends to be salty as well. And that's, I doubled up on the salt by doing that this week. So that's the kind of the major speed bump that you could hit there.
And talking about salt and smoke, I actually just recently at Penzi Spice up in, is it Beaverton, I guess? I stopped by their shop and they have hickory smoked salt.
Nice.
And it packs a heavy duty smoky punch. So you could even go that route. And of course, the caveat there is it is salt. So you can't just throw it in for smoke. You're salting your dish as well. But it's kind of a fun, different, if you don't want to, it'd be especially great if you don't want to use smoked paprika, if you don't want to give that kind of pepper flavor.
Yeah.
Of course, in chili, you probably would, but for other dishes, smoked salt's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're right. Liquid smoke, a little bit of that goes a super long way. That's some potent stuff.
Every time I see that in a recipe, I'm like, nope, not going to happen.
Yep.
And I do feel like just roasting peppers, even just in an oven, in an electric oven that I have, or a gas oven, it's not a smoky flavor, but it's just a slightly different flavor of the roasted chili, that kind of reads almost as a smoky flavor.
And so, can we talk about that for just a second? So what's your easy process then? If I have some, let's say I have some Anaheim chilies and I want to roast them up in the oven. So what do you do exactly?
I would just take some, usually I just actually lay out some aluminum foil, throw the Anaheim chilies on there, and just kind of turn up the edges and throw it into the oven. If I want to do it fast, then I do it on broil. The only problem there is, like, an Anaheim chili is kind of flat, and so it's hard to get all four sides.
Yeah.
You can get two of them pretty well, but then you usually end up with skin that sticks down the edges. And so the more effective way is to go with the bake.
And so then
you bake them at 350, 400. And then just wait until you see that the skin is blistering all over them. And then usually and this is assuming you have time, of course, because mm-hmm. then I just like to let them cool, like in the fridge, because then that skin really, really gets slack. If you try mm-hmm. and peel chilies right out of the oven, you're going to burn yourself for one thing. And usually the skin doesn't have enough time to get really pull away from the flesh.
Yeah. One thing if you're in a hurry, one thing I do is I take a paper bag and I throw the chilies into the paper bag and kind of curl it up and mm-hmm. They steam a little bit.
Right.
And then after 10 minutes or so, you can pop them out and that you can usually pull the skin off pretty easily.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And then of course you got to remember, you know, to get rid of the seeds because I mean, it's not totally necessary, but you don't want all of those seeds in your chili.
So those were great tips to kind of take chili up a notch. So let's share maybe. I know you have a recipe you kind of want to just mention and talk about a little bit, as do I. So sure. Maybe we should just share a couple of ideas for chili, and which I'll share in the show notes, and to give people kind of a jumping off point, because I'm sure there are people out there that have never made chili. And it's an easy, relatively difficult thing to screw up if you're True. Not going crazy. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's share a couple of chili recipes. Do you want to go first? Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and so mine is essentially what you and I think of as a traditional recipe, right? Where you brown some ground meat. I like to brown it, then move it out of the Dutch oven. That's what I cook it in. And then throw in vegetables. And I like to go pretty heavy on vegetables. I don't just go with like a lot of onion and some celery. I go full mirepoix, onion, celery, and carrots. And, if you're interested in doing that and not having your kids know, then you can just throw those all into a food processor and just grind them up pretty fine. It's kind of the same way I would do if I was making a marinara sauce. I start with that base as well. Actually, the process is really, really similar between making my chili base and making my meat sauce. And of course I like to go heavy on garlic as well. I like to get some wine in there because evidently wine extracts some different compounds from your tomatoes. And so, you know, kind of deglaze with the wine, then add the tomato sauce in before the wine's all cooked off. Then I add my stock, bring it up to a simmer, add my, you know, chili powder and any chilies that I'm going to add as well. And then some beans. And I do like to use beans. So one other thing that I do like to do is to use dried beans and cook those from dried. Now that I have a pressure cooker, that's something I can do on a weeknight really easily, you know, without soaking them. But if you plan ahead, I didn't tell you this earlier, kind of one of the things that led to me becoming a better cook was my son is a swimmer, and so every weeknight during the school year, he's swimming in the evening. And so our dinner time was sometimes 8:30 p.m., you know, after he got home from practice. Mm-hmm. And so I could get home from work at 6:30 and still have a couple hours to really experiment. And so then I could do dried beans on a weeknight easily. You know, I had the 90 minutes that I needed if I wanted to do them in the oven, or, you know, 45 minutes if I wanted to do them on the stovetop. So, but now with the pressure cooker, it's much easier because I can do them in about a half hour.
Yeah, which is awesome. I personally, I think that's a great way to go. Just mm-hmm. for me, convenience, I typically use canned.
Yeah, I do too a lot.
Okay, so that's a great basic chili recipe, one that you can experiment with a lot. You can put in your pumpkin or whatever crazy weird.
I did forget to mention that yeah, I threw in a couple cups of pumpkin.
Butternut squash, whatever, yeah. Whatever it is would probably work. And, yeah, so that's exactly, the kind of chili I think of when I think of chili. Do you remember what chili? I couldn't think of the name and I haven't Googled it. Do you remember the commercials? Cause I think you and I are roughly the same age. When yeah. we were kids, it was something chili thick enough that you could stand up a fork. Do you remember that commercial? And the commercial would be a bowl of chili and you'd see this big manly hand like jam a fork yeah. in it and it would stand up. What was that? Denison's? I cannot think.
It might have been Denison's. Denison's or Bush's. But I think you're right though. I know it wasn't Nally.
It's unfortunately one of those things that is taking up like hard drive space in my brain right. that doesn't need to be there, but I can't forget it.
Yes. I have so many commercial jingles from the late 70s and early 80s.
Yeah. It's horrid. So recipe I'm going to stick in the show notes is not crazy too far off, the reservation when it comes to chili, but it's a green chili. And nice. It's a white bean chicken chili, but it uses tomatillos and green chilies. So it's not using chili powder or the red chili, kind of a base.
Just some cumin in there, maybe?
Yeah, some cumin. Exactly. Here, I've got it written down right here. Onion, garlic, canned tomatillos, canned diced tomatoes, canned green chilies for ease. I mean, you can obviously do fresh. You can even roast these up if you wanted to. And even though, it never calls for kind of the roasted version, my recipe, I always typically get roasted if I can find them.
And the color that you get like off a poblano, you can't duplicate in anything canned.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And then, a little oregano, a little cumin, a little oregano, because if you put too much in, you're dangerously close to marinara sauce territory and you don't want that kind of flavor profile.
Yeah. I actually have that in my chili powder recipe, a little bit of oregano.
Yeah.
I got it from Alton Brown.
Yeah. And a little coriander. Brown coriander, which is great. Yep. And then, chicken broth, white beans, and chicken meat. And you basically just combine it all and simmer it. It's really easy.
Yeah.
But, and it sounds, you know, when I think of soup and chili, I really like a thick, hearty. I mean, that's what I crave.
Yeah.
And every time I go to make this, I think, it's not going to satisfy my thick, hearty, because it's a little brothy. Mm-hmm. But surprisingly, when it's all said and done, it is thick and hearty. And it's just a completely different kind of a flavor profile. So my wife's not a huge fan of tomato sauce. I mean, she likes tomatoes and tomato sauce, but it's like, I could eat tomato sauce like soup. Like I can eat marinara sauce like soup because I love it. She's not like that. So oftentimes when I make chili, I'll switch it up and do this because it's not tomato based. It's not tomato sauce based.
I love some green sauce.
Yeah. And it calls for, I put diced tomatoes in here, but it's such a small quantity. It doesn't add much color. It just adds a little bit of texture and some more acid. So I'll put that recipe up, on the show notes as well.
So I did think of one kind of final tip on chili. If you have it, use it, and that is time. Because one thing that I like to do, I feel like ground meat can be a little tough. You know, if you brown it really, really hot, it gets a little dried out and that kind of stuff. But so if you have time, what I like to do is to get my chili up to a simmer on the stove in a Dutch oven and then slip it into like a 300 degree oven or 250 degree oven for like an hour if I have that time. Because I feel like even ground meat really is improved with a good braise. Mm-hmm. It's really, really tender. And the other thing I like to do in my recipe, I use beef and pork.
So ground pork or?
Yeah, ground pork.
Okay.
So I usually do like a pound of ground beef and a half pound of ground pork.
So okay. That's fantastic.
If you're into pork, this way we have the big three covered. You've got chicken, I've got beef and pork.
Perfect. Okay. Well, I think that gets us about to the end of our chili cast time. I think people are armed and dangerous now when it comes to chili, and the Super Bowl is coming up, so they should definitely get in the kitchen. And especially, they've got a little time to plan. So to your final point, they have time to take it slow, make a nice, delicious chili, hopefully on Saturday. They can serve it on Sunday at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and then just put it in your slow cooker on Sunday morning.
Exactly. You don't even have to do anything. When your guests arrive, you can just hang out, and you don't have to scramble over your food. Yep. So, Seth, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation all about chili with Seth Heasley of the Take Me to Your Reader podcast. I'm so glad Seth had some time to come on and give us his great tips for taking his chili game up a notch. And I hope you got some ideas to take your chili game up a notch. And if you've never made chili, I hope you're at least inspired to give it a shot. It's really, really easy to get started making a great pot of chili. And as we mentioned in the conversation, you can really take it anywhere you want to go. And it's just in time for the Super Bowl too. So if you're ready to watch the big show on your new big screen TV and you're going to have some people over, nothing better than a big pot of chili to go with it. Well, that does it for another episode of the show. Once again, thank you so much for taking time to put me into your ears and listen to the Kitchen Counter podcast. As I mentioned before, if you want to get to the show notes for this episode, that was at kitchencounterpodcast.com/84. And if you'd like to send me an email, that's feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Also, if you feel like it, head on over to Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Kitchen Counter Podcast. You'll find me there. Love to connect. All right, everybody. I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Until next time, happy cooking.